Mao Zedong's China would seem to be the total opposite to American values, but Sidney Rittenberg didn't see it that way. He was the first foreigner to join the Chinese Communist Party and went on to play an important role in the unfolding of 20th century Chinese history, forming close personal relations with Chairman Mao, Prime Minister Zhou Enlai, and other prominent figures. During the 35 years he spent in China, he was also imprisoned twice for a total of 16 years. Irv Drazin, Lucy Ostrander, and Don Sellers have made a documentary called The Revolutionary, in which Sidney tells his story in great detail. It opens tomorrow at the Quad Cinema, and I'm very pleased it has brought producer Irv Drazin and Sidney Rittenberg himself to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we're talking to Sidney in his home now in Washington?
Box Island, Washington.
Now, were you the only American citizen to join the Chinese Communist Party?
Actually, I was not. At that particular time in history, I was. But there had been earlier ones, and so I really wasn't the only one.
And then other foreigners also joined along the way?
Yeah, but very, very few.
Did you think you might join the Communist Party before you traveled to the revolutionary base at Yan'an?
Never entered my head.
So what made you join the party in the first place?
Well, I was in those days it really looked like the contrast between the clean, plebeian, agrarian revolutionary, the way it looked, a communist party of that day, and the really disintegrating nationalist regime was so stark that naturally, I think, like most Americans in China, I felt that the communists were the people to support, and I was young and footloose and fancy-free, and I was happy to throw in my lot with them.
Now, Irv, you've produced many China-related documentaries before, Misunderstanding China, China After Tiananmen, and Looking for Mao. What got you interested in China?
First, let me say good morning, Sid.
Good morning.
It's hard to say. I didn't plan it that way. I remember in the eighth grade, I wrote a paper which was Cafe, Land of Mystery, Intrigue, and Enchantment. Three stereotypes for the price of one. I hope I atoned for that with Misunderstanding China.
Well, that was released in 1972 during the Cultural Revolution. What was its focus?
Actually, its focus began to be as an examination of U.S.-China policy, which then dramatically changed during 1971 and 1972, and CBS News decided to broadcast it just before President Nixon's visit to China. And its focus was the American experience in China, American attitudes, American perceptions and misperceptions.
Is that when you first heard of Sidney's story?
No. When I first stepped foot in China in 1973, I had no idea there was an American named Sidney Rittenberg halfway through a prison sentence in Beijing.
Sidney, you were kept in prison for a year after the Cultural Revolution was over. Why weren't you released when Mao died?
Well, you know about bureaucracy. The mills of the gods grind slowly. In fact, if it weren't for a couple of powerful friends, I would have stayed another year before I got out.
How did you wind up getting in touch with Sidney, with Irv, or did Irv get in touch with you?
Actually, it happened through a former student of hers, Lucy Ostrander, mm-hmm. also one of the producers. And I have to say, you know, Irv Drazin is a tremendous talent. I mean, he sat there talking with me like my Uncle Bud. He had me saying things that I not only hadn't planned to say, I hadn't even thought of before.
Well, you had written a memoir.
I had.
And these were things came out during the filming that you hadn't thought of to include in the memoir?
There were things, yes.
You were born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina, and you say that there are three things that Charlestonians share with the Chinese.
Right.
They are?
They are. We eat rice every day, we worship our ancestors, and we don't talk English.
That's it. So that automatically gave you a real connection?
That's right.
You were you were kind of a leftist college student at the University of South Carolina.
I was.
Did your involvement in union activities and workers' rights spark that interest? Most of the young communists of the day were more interested in Stalin's Soviet Union.
Yeah, but, you know, in the South, we weren't that interested in the Soviet Union. We were more about human rights and about organizing real decent labor unions.
So you were drafted into the military?
I volunteered and was turned down for poor vision. And then I started organizing the Camel cigarette plant in Winston-Salem. And Dick Reynolds was chairman of the draft board, and I was in the combat infantry before I could turn around.
So that you were punished even though you had wanted to go in the first place. But how did you wind up being taught Chinese and being sent to China?
Well, they came around with a language aptitude test for Army men that were had been through college. And they picked me to study Japanese and be in military government after the war. And I did not want military government, and I wanted to come right home after the war. So I talked myself into Chinese, because China being an ally, I wouldn't be stuck out there. And, you know, it took 35 years to get home.
Yeah, you decided to stay when all of your colleagues did go home.
Yeah.
You finally came home in 1980?
That's right. We moved back here in 1980.
When you went there, did the party and the leaders trust you immediately?
I think to a certain extent, but I was able to do things that were helpful to them when they were working underground in Kunming and in Shanghai, and that gradually built up trust. But as history proves, they never fully 100% trusted me.
Well, can you tell us about your experience in Yan'an, the base of Mao Zedong's guerrilla warfare? What was it like to be the only foreigner there?
Well, actually, there were two Russians, two Soviet doctors, who were doctors and also doing intelligence. And I'll tell you, it felt wonderful. It was like the stories you read about the early Christians. It was very, it was puritanical. Life was very simple. There were very few barriers between upper stratum and lower stratum people. And it gave you a feeling that there was really going to be a democratic new China.
And Mao took great interest in you, I'm assuming partly because he was curious about the United States.
That's right. The United States, I think, was the only country that really kept him curious and inquiring. The book that his doctor wrote about his personal life also confirms that.
Did you have a sense back then that this man was going to change history?
I did. I didn't think it would be anything like that quickly, but I did. He gave you the impression of being a bit of a prophet, very, very wise.
My guests are Sidney Rittenberg and Irv Drasnin. We're talking about the story that's told in a new documentary called The Revolutionary that opens tomorrow here in New York at the Quad Cinema. Irv, this documentary took a long time to make. Why did it take so long?
Much longer than we expected.
Five years of interviews.
Independent documentaries, unlike any other documentary I've made, take a lot of fundraising, and it prolongs the process. I mean, the first time we interviewed Sid, we didn't have the money to do it in high definition, and on the basis of that interview, we knew that to reach as wide an audience as possible, we had to do that. That helped to prolong the process. And we kept going back to Sidney for clarification. We tried to continue the conversation to get as deeply as we could into his experience.
And Sidney, was this to some degree a way of you figuring out why you had done what you had done?
It was a great experience for me because, sort of reliving it, I was able to put it into better perspective.
Now, Mao was eager to form a relationship with the United States before the revolution was won by him in 1949. What happened?
Well, what happened is really we slammed the door in his face.
Because the United States had thrown in its lot with Chiang Kai-shek?
It was partly that, but I think the main thing wasn't even that. The main thing is that Washington was so ideological that the people at the State Department were certain that after the war, if the communists won in China, they were going to ally themselves with the Russians, and that the Western world would face a Soviet-Chinese military alliance. That's what they were really afraid of.
Well, to some degree, isn't that what happened? Mao actually threw you in jail because Stalin told him to, didn't he?
That's right. He did.
That was 1949, right after the revolution was won.
Right.
Did Stalin give Mao any evidence that you were an American spy?
No, of course not. There wasn't any evidence.
So what was imprisonment like? You were in prison, what, for 6 years?
Yeah. The first year was in total darkness. That was bad. Then at the end of the first year, they told me that they had no problem with me. They believed that I was telling the truth. But I knew unspoken was the fact that since the charges came from the Soviet Union, that they couldn't let me go. So they kept me there. They allowed me to study, to have books and study, still in solitary. But
you were never tortured?
Not physically, no. There's solitary itself is a form of mental torture. And there were other things, like during the interrogation, they would try to keep you from sleeping at night. The guard would bang on the door as soon as he saw you drop off to sleep. But I'm a good sleeper. It didn't bother me too much.
You were also given the opportunity to leave the country. You chose to stay, and then later when you were released in 1955, after Stalin died, you even went back to working for the party. Wouldn't most people have wanted to get out after having been unjustly imprisoned?
Probably most people would, but I don't know. There's a close line between being stubbornly sticking to principle and just being plain stupid. But I think I was right. It came out in my favor that I did stay, and I met my dream girl, and we built a wonderful family. And so I think I came out ahead.
Now, Irv, were you curious about that? Were you curious about the reasons that Sidney stayed? Because to some degree, isn't this also the story of a true believer?
I think it is part of the story of the true believer. I mean, Sidney made choices along the way in his life that I think most people would not have made.
I would have gotten out of there.
I would have too.
6 years of prison. But then you did wind up getting a good job. You were at Radio Beijing as a foreign correspondent, foreign expert, and
That's
you got
right.
a lot of privileges, and you also were paid more than Chairman Mao.
Yeah, well, nobody was paid a lot, but yeah, that's true. I had a privileged position because I was considered to have been tried and found true, and so I got a great deal of trust and was privy to highly classified information and so on. Until the Cultural Revolution. And then my wife and I threw in our lot with the young people who were trying to dismantle the dictatorship. And of course, that got me back for another 10 years in solitary.
So you, after that, I think you decided enough is enough.
Well, after that, I decided that this stubborn dream of working on building bridges between Chinese and Americans, it had to be done from the American side, not from the Chinese side.
Now, when you came back, how were you received? Is it possible to get a job in the United States when your resume includes phrases like confidant to Mao Zedong?
Yeah, well, it's unbelievable. We were received with great warmth. The press was very friendly. The New York Times wrote a great long story. I was formally received by Richard Holbrooke, Assistant Secretary of State in Washington, and we really had... The only problem was I was looking for a place in academia, and that took a couple of years to accomplish.
But you became a consultant instead. Obviously, you know a lot about China. Irv,
yeah.
This film, I'm assuming, has been seen at least by people who have access to the Internet in China. And there was one private screening.
The film, of course, cannot be shown in China. Not to Chinese audiences or in public. There were screenings sponsored by the Foreign Correspondents Clubs in Beijing, which took place in a foreign embassy, so technically you're not on Chinese soil. There was another screening in Shanghai and a screening in Hong Kong.
Are people surprised to learn the story?
I think there are people, who, of course, who do not remember well, which is one reason to make this film, the Maoist era and what took place. And therefore, I think there are things about this story that were eye-opening.
And, Sidney, you say that Mao was both a genius and an evil person. He was both, you see him as both a positive and a negative figure?
Yes, I do. Very complicated figure.
You also did an interview in March at CCTV America where you confirmed the Chinese journalists' question that if you had had the chance to live it all over again, you would do it again. At the end of this film, you seem less sure. You said that if you didn't join the party when you went to China, you were able to make more of a contribution, do less damage. So have you changed your opinion about this, the whole experience?
No, actually, that's a line that I would like to edit out.
Okay, well, I got
it.
We have to leave it there, unfortunately.
I'm surprised to hear that, Sid.
Irv Drasin will be doing a Q&A tomorrow at the Quad at the 7:30 screening, and the theater will be Skyping it to Sid Rittenberg. For further appearances, check our show page at WNYC.org.